You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Friday, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters Friday. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
In general, people say it's better to own a home. Do you have anything to add to their argument?
I don't own a home. I mean, I think, like, I've always felt guilty a lot of times about not doing it. But then, because I think for that very reason, because it's been imbued in me, you know, about home ownership and, hey, you are throwing away money.
Well, let's just examine the math of that. Compound interest, this is my favorite calculator. If you look at the actual numbers, owning a home and going to college, which everybody does, you basically cost yourself between $1 and $5 million, depending on how you do it, in the time of your life, which was the money you needed to retire. And
yes.
Without doing anything else, you could have, just by not owning a home and not going to college, all of your kids will be able to take care of themselves.
Wow.
All right, Steve Cohen on the podcast with me. We're answering questions and just riffing.
Yes, it's exciting to be back with you, James.
So I wanted to talk about, I wanted to update something I wrote about a long time ago, which were the Ten Commandments of the American religion. I feel like advertising and marketing and branding has created these beliefs among U.S. citizens that have hurt our society, hurt everybody's pocketbooks, and people irrationally argue to the bone to stand up for these things that are just not so smart. So one of them, which, you know, everybody will argue with me about, and I get it, but one of them is owning a home. Everybody feels like it's a good thing to own a home. They say if you're renting, you're flushing money down the toilet.
Sure.
And if you own a home, the idea is it goes up in value and it's a good source of savings as opposed to the stock market. It's very rare for home prices to go down. It's only happened once in the past 60 years, which is a financial crisis. And in general, people say it's better to own a home. Do you have anything to add to their argument?
I don't own a home. I mean, I think, like, I've always felt guilty a lot of times about not doing it. But then because I think for that very reason, because it's been imbued in me, you know, about home ownership and, hey, you are throwing away money and you need to, you know.
Well, let's just examine the math of that. So in New York City, let's just make numbers up.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, a typical rent might be $5,000.
Sure.
Right? And for like a one-bedroom apartment?
Yeah, it's probably between like $3,000 and $4,000 for one bedroom to rent, you know. But sure, let's
just say $5,000.
Yeah.
And now for one bedroom,
our listeners in Oklahoma and
New York City is disgusting.
Midwest.
You should not live don't live in Manhattan.
Like when you had moved to Cold Spring, you weren't paying.
When I moved to Cold Spring, though, at some point I realized, oh my gosh, this is easy to live here. Like, the rent's nothing and it's beautiful and it's in nature. And then I had to move back to New York City. But if you don't have to live here, you probably shouldn't live here. It's too expensive to live here. So, but let's just look at it.
Let's say you're paying $5,000 a month.
And what would you pay? How much would it cost to own a one bedroom apartment in the same building that where you're spending
$5,000? Maybe $600,000 or $700,000. I mean, no, then it'd be like $1 million probably.
Yeah, so $1 million.
Right.
Okay. So in one case, you're paying $5,000 a month. Let's just look at today, how much money is in your bank account.
Sure.
And then we'll look at 5 years from now. So I don't want to get too much into math. It's not going to be boring. Yeah. But if I wanted to buy $1 million home, I've got to put down probably $250,000 or $300,000.
Yes.
So the guy who's paying $5,000 a month rent, where is he finding the $300,000 to buy the exact same apartment?
Yeah.
And then, okay, you have a $700,000 mortgage, right? If you're putting $300,000 down.
Yes.
And you're paying about a 6% interest rate. Is that what interest rates are? So you're taking on $700,000 at a 6% interest rate. So that's about almost $4,000 a year. So now you just gave $300,000 to the bank, and you borrowed $700,000. So now instead of paying $5,000 a month rent, you're paying $4,000 in just interest.
Right.
Okay. So that's money you are throwing down the toilet because that's just the interest payment. And let's say you got a 30-year mortgage. And
taxes, maintenance.
So taxes and then maintenance, you're probably spending like up to $6,000 to $8,000 a month.
Exactly.
And it's volatile. You don't know how much you're going to pay because of the maintenance.
Yeah.
It could be $10,000 one month, zero the next month. The taxes, you have no control. The government tells you how much you owe in housing taxes. You have no control over that.
Yeah.
You with your income, you kind of have control over the taxes you pay. The more money you make, the more taxes you pay.
Yeah, interesting.
With housing, they tell you what your house is worth and what taxes you pay. And people argue with this all the time. It's not fair. And so
what kind of tax deduction are you getting? Like,
you don't get any tax deduction anymore on the interest payments. That's a new tax, the Trump tax laws.
Oh, interesting.
So which could be an argument for housing prices going down in the future because a big benefit of owning a home, getting that deduction no longer exists. So
you know, you get some. I mean, I feel like so many people. I mean,
we can Google it, but let's say you get a tax deduction. Okay,
yeah, I think you definitely do.
You're still paying
probably reduced.
Instead of paying $5,000 a month rent, let's just compare. Renting, you're paying $5,000 a month rent, and owning, you're out $300,000 cash. Like you can't borrow that.
Right,
that's the amount you're just out is gone from your bank account.
Right.
And you're paying more money per month. You're paying $68,000 a month minimum,
right?
Maybe more,
right?
And so where's the throwing the money down the toilet? You're throwing the money down the toilet when you own. Now, so let's look at the other side of that. You're not making. You know, let's see, housing goes up 6%.
Right.
Oh, here's my phone.
That's your mortgage broker.
No, it's Seamless because I always order it. Hold on, I'm going to answer it on the podcast. Hello? Yeah, this is James.
I'm sorry, we're out of avocado now.
You're out of avocado? How could you be out of avocado? My daughter needs her avocado. What kind of protein? Okay, tuna. Regular tuna. No problem. Thank you, Seamless. Bye. All right. It's about time Seamless gets a little... Seamless is our sponsor. No. That would be great if Seamless was our sponsor and that was the ad.
Yeah, let's
like, they
let's
gave great
see,
service.
Because you're so great to them and you love their avocado service.
Well, but no.
Seamless,
they
we're going to reach out to you.
And they're willing... See here, okay, we're going to get to grocery stores in a second, that'll be next.
That's not part of the Ten Commandments of the American religion.
No, it kind of is, actually.
Yes. Oh, good. Okay.
So again, the benefit of owning home then is that you might make more money than you would have.
Right.
So when you're renting, you have an extra $300,000 in your pocket.
Yes.
Which, by the way, it's not trivial. Like,
sure.
Like you could sleep at night with the extra $300,000 in your bank. But and potentially you can make money with that. So I don't know. And it's not a given that every piece of real estate makes money. I've owned houses several times and lost money each time.
I gotta be honest, because like I think I brought up my discomfort at not owning and I think sometimes it may not make sense to pay at New York City to buy something at New York City prices, right? We're looking through those lens. If you are,
I think that's true for all the U.S.
That's fine, you know. But I do think I felt a little bit differently when I started working with you because you're a guy who had a ton of money and you know had a lot of money and then lost it. But then you made it again. Then you lost it. But then you made it again. And So even if you did all those
things. Why are you making me feel bad on the podcast?
I think it's amazing. I think it's actually inspiring to everybody out there, which is, but I think, so you're kind of, you know, like what do I always say? Like you start from where you are and you know, we spend a lot of time feeling guilty about certain things. And yes, it could be the collective pressure of society thinking you need to do this a certain way.
Well, I think it's because like, you know, from what I understand, this may or may not be, this is what I've read and what I've heard, but let's just take it with a grain of salt. Fannie Mae or some part of the real estate industry is what created the notion. It was a marketing term, the American dream. The idea of owning a house in the suburbs with a yard and the white picket fence, that became this mythology of the American dream.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it was just a marketing scam because they lend you the money. And that, you know, Fannie Mae backs a lot of the loans from the banks. So they make money on every person who borrows money to buy a house. So of course they're going to have all this. And then here's the other thing too: the 100 million people or so who own homes, they are incentivized to say it's better to own a home because they don't want people to stop owning homes because that's how prices rise. Yeah, so they'll always argue.
There's
confirmation bias, and there's also kind of self-interest. To get other people to do what you've done, particularly if it helps prices rise in your area. But you know, the other thing is, and I'll play devil's advocate against myself. Some people really do like the roots of knowing for the next 18 years, you know, their kids are zero, they'll grow up with the same friends and the same school system. Like I rent an apartment right now. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to stay there more than 3 years, say.
Sure.
But the average American buys and sells a house every 4.5 years. So that's the churn. That's the average churn on home ownership. So that argument doesn't really, that argument works and I get it, except the fact that in practice, it doesn't happen for most people. If the average is 4.5, some people hold it for 20 years. Some people only hold a home for 1 or 2 years.
Yeah. I think what I've learned, you know, probably it's been reinforced since working with you is obviously like, there, as you have a chance to kind of question why we do things, we're going to get to your other 9 commandments. But I think it's not one size fits all. And I think we waste a lot of energy trying to adhere to cultural mores for whatever reason they've been, you know, engendered upon us, you know, and we waste rather than saying, okay, what is actually best for me, you know? And so for some people, they might be able to justify it, or they may be able to irrationally explain it. Like, you know, in behavioral economics, right? A lot of people do things and they spend money on certain things and skimp on others, and they have a reason for feeling okay about it. It doesn't bother them that much about it. You know?
Right. Like, let's say someone takes that $300,000 instead of, and they don't buy a house. Here's the thing also about buying a house as an investment. I get it why you might want to do it as an investment if you're a big believer in real estate. But who would take, here are the qualifications of a bad investment. It's all your money, you're borrowing also, and it's illiquid, meaning you can't, like a stock I could sell tomorrow, but a house, exactly when you need the cash is exactly when you can't sell it. So, because like when the economy's tanking, you can't sell your house and you need the cash. So now you're suddenly depressed and stressed.
You know, okay, now I remember you had this argument with, or this conversation with Jim Norton when you were on his show. And he said, well, I like to own a house, you know, because they asked you about living in Airbnbs, which is decidedly not owning anything.
Right.
You know, and then he said, well, I live in the city. I feel comfortable. It just gives me something. I know if everything else, you know, falls to pot for me, at least I still have my apartment.
But that's not true, though, because if you don't pay back the bank and you don't pay back you're paying more than rent for your interest and the taxes and the maintenance. If you don't pay for any of these things, you don't own your house. The bank's going to take it, or the government's going to take it, or your house is going to fall apart if you don't pay the maintenance.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm not sure you actually have anything. And even when you own it outright, you still have the taxes and the maintenance.
Sure.
Which could be as much as rent in some years. I'm going to just figure out. Let's say you're 30 years old and you're going to buy a house in New York City. Now, again, it's different than other places. And let's say you compound at 6%.
Right.
Which is low. Years to grow. 30. Let's just say 30 years you're going to own it from 30 to 60. Annual addition, 0. Hold on, I'm using my compound interest calculator. This is not working. I have to find another compound interest calculator. Money Chimp, you cannot be a sponsor of this podcast. Okay, so 300,000, length of time, 30 years, interest rate, 6%, compound annually, calculate. Okay, so that $300,000 in 30 years would turn into $1.723 million. So, and that's only compounding at 6%. You know,
right.
If you go to, there's a lot of different ways you can make more. 6% is like conservative.
Sure.
The stock market goes up on average like 7 or 8% per year. And that's just passively investing in the stock market. So, I mean, and 1 percentage point, people don't realize, makes a big difference. So let's just say 7%, the same time period, everything else the same. That's $2.3 million with that $300,000. So it's not such a bad thing. And it's probably less risky because you could diversify more and it's more liquid. So you can get access to cash when you need it. $2.3 million, enough to retire on by the time you're 60.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I don't, again, I don't see.
And move to a cheaper place than a $5,000 apartment.
Well, once the kids are out of the house, move to a cheaper place.
Yeah.
Or move out of the city, for one thing.
Yeah.
So again, I don't see, the only benefit I really see is the confidence that you could stay there for 18 years, given that you're going to pay more money, you're going to take more financial risk, and it's a worse investment, and you can't get out of this investment even if you want to. So that's the only benefit I see.
And it's interesting because, you know, you'd written a great post about this, and you were just talking about how this is considered to be the biggest kind of blasphemy, right? Like you said, you could say other, like these are among the things that people could say about, like, hey, you need to own a home, you need to go to college, and some of these other ones. And you've written about this before, and what's the kind of reaction you usually get?
People get really angry. Like, I once was giving a talk, so I used to be a spokesperson for Fidelity, and I was once giving a talk for them, and I said this in the talk, and people were screaming at me, you know, because it's a cognitive bias, confirmation bias, and you're arguing against, you know, the asset prices going up for them. You know, if you're saying, if you're telling people don't buy a home, that's like telling someone who owns Apple, oh, I'm going to tell everybody else in the world to not buy Apple.
Sure.
So people get very upset.
Feel like you're jeopardizing their investment.
And just think about it. It's the biggest financial risk many people will ever take in their entire lives. But at the same time, most people then don't have money for retirement. Like less than 5% of people, when they retire, have more than enough money to last them a year.
Right.
And so here I just gave you a way. Oh, instead of putting the money down in the house, you have $2.3 million when you retire. It's not trivial.
Yeah.
So like you look at all these big things that people spend money on, and then you wonder why they can't afford retirement. So the next commandment is, of course, college educations. Now, I've talked and written about this a lot, but let's just update this a little bit. Yeah. Since 1977, tuitions have gone up faster than inflation by 10%. Not on average, but every single year has gone up 10% or more faster than inflation every single year. Medical costs have gone up faster than inflation every year since 1977 also by about 3%. So tuitions by far, why are tuitions going up so much? And meanwhile, student loan debt is $1.5 trillion, more than $1.5 trillion now. Who has student loan debt? Kids age 18 to 35. Guess what? Wages for people ages 18 to 35 have been flat versus inflation since 1992. So that's 27 years now. Wages have been flat for the exact people where debt, student loan debt has been going up. And then on top of it, student loan debt, oddly, is the only kind of debt you can't get rid of in a bankruptcy. So Steve, if I owe you money and then you want the money back and I go bankrupt, I don't have to pay you.
Wow.
or if I owe the bank money for a house, I don't have to pay the bank.
Sure.
But if I owe the government money for a student loan, and the government also set up this company, Sally Mae, kind of like Fannie Mae, but for student loans.
Yeah.
If I owe the government money, the government will come in and chase me for the rest of my life and get those student loans from me, whether I'm bankrupt or not.
Right. And I've read a lot of articles about that, you know, just the relentlessness of student debt and how it's really affected a lot of those people. Now, I'll play the I'll play the devil's advocate too, but like maybe then it's okay. Maybe don't go to a school that costs $75,000 a year. Maybe go to a cheaper school.
I agree.
Yes.
But more schools than ever are costing more than $50,000. Like try to find a school in the top 100, particularly if it's out of state, that where, like what school did you go to?
University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
University of Michigan. My dad went there as well.
Yeah, great place to go.
And we had a recent podcast guest, right? Who went to the university?
Jordan Harbinger.
Brad Meltzer.
Brad Meltzer. Oh, yeah, Brad, man. Yeah, Brad actually spoke at Michigan Law School the other day.
So University of Michigan, which is a public school, right? It's owned by the government.
Yes.
The out-of-state tuition is $43,000 a year.
It's I mean, and it's...
That was 2016, so it's probably more right now.
I think it's definitely more. And,
And it was cheap. It was probably $27,000 a year when you went.
Yes, which... Obviously, long time.
So it's gone up. It's gone up faster than inflation.
Yes,
and it's going to continue to go faster than inflation. And again, you get a loan for that. You're paying six. So you're not paying. Where's my calculator?
And when you went to Cornell, same kind of thing.
Oh yeah, I borrowed money, but I graduated a year early to avoid paying. I paid for everything.
Oh,
right,
wow.
I paid for all my tuition.
No, I did not.
And I borrowed all the money, and I actually, believe it or not, won some chess tournaments that helped me pay. And I probably worked 40 hours a week at jobs on top of the six courses a semester I was taking because I wanted to graduate early to not pay. And then I took courses every summer. But let's say
you couldn't even enjoy the amazing social life that Ithaca has to offer.
I was not able to. So let's say 45,000 times four is 180,000, right?
Yeah.
So 180,000. And we're gonna pay this back over 30 years. What's interest on the student loan?
That I do not know.
Let's just say it's 6%.
Yeah, 6%. Which is probably conservative. Yeah,
conservative. I'm being as conservative as possible. So somebody going to University of Michigan, they're not paying $180,000 tuition. They're paying $1,033,000 tuition.
Wow.
Because of the interest. And you can't get rid of that. And they're not making any more money than people did 27 years ago when tuitions were much less. So what are you getting in your college education that's worth $1 million? Like, let's say you start working a job at the age of 18.
Right.
So now instead of spending $50,000 a year, you're making
$50,000
a year and you're saving it and and you don't have the debt. Like, you're saving on this $1 million. So presumably you could, as you accumulate money, you could invest it instead of putting it into paying down your debt. What people say, oh, well, you can't get a job. You're telling me if you start at 18 accumulating skills, you can't, in 30 years, not only will you have avoided paying off $1 million for your tuition, you would have made $1 million plus the interest on that. So, in 30 years, you would make probably, all right, we're going to start off with zero. We're going to use compound interest. This is my favorite calculator. We're going to contribute, let's just say you only make $40,000 a year. Okay, you don't have a college tuition, so you have some job making $40,000 a year. I'm being, again, conservative, 30 years. And let's say when you invest, you only make 4%. I'm being extra conservative.
Right.
So you didn't go to college, but you start off making $40,000 a year and you never add to your salary. Your salary always stays $40,000 because people think incorrectly that you won't get a good job and you'll always be working in a bodega or something. Let's see how much you'll have. You'll have $26 million.
Wow.
So... That's if you always save and you start off at 18 and by the time you're 48 maybe
no. Seems a lot of money.
No, but I'm looking at the thing. I'm amount of money you have available initially, zero. Amount that you plan to add. Oh shoot.
I did it wrong.
Okay. Yes.
That's why I need to go to college, take some math classes.
4,000 a month, 4% interest. Okay, $2.7 million.
So
again, and now that's in a world where most people are going to college and they're retiring with less than a year's worth of money. They can never retire because they're spending their whole. Yeah. You're not finished paying your student loans off till your 40s or 50s. So let's play the devil's advocate now. The benefit is, A, you can get jobs like
yeah.
doctor or lawyer. There's some jobs where by law you have to go to college. But forget those for a second. You know, to be a computer programmer, you don't need a by law you don't need a degree, and you can get more skills at Khan Academy or Code Academy than you would in college, because college is a little bit, just by definition, their textbooks are a few years out of date, and you can actually start working instead of just always working to pay back your debt. I mean, what's the argument for college?
Friends, socialization.
Yes.
You know,
but let's say you were interested in being a television producer, right? You were a TV news producer for years.
TV news producer.
If you didn't go to college now, you could start off as an intern at 100%. The age of 18 at NBC, and you rise up after you know the people. No one's going to ask you, "Well, where was your degree?"
I wonder if that's a barrier to entry. You know, there have been people who didn't graduate or, you know, go to college. You know, I don't think Peter Jennings went. You know, there are other people who, so yes. Or conceivably, you could start there and then start college for a semester just to get in and then drop out. And then you could rise up.
Like, no one's ever asked to see my degree.
No.
Like, potentially.
You threw it out, too.
Potentially, I could have, I mean, I suppose someone in a background check could call my alma mater and say, did James go there?
Yeah.
They would say yes, hopefully, and graduated. But I almost didn't graduate. I kind of had to cheat in order to graduate. Because I was graduating in 3 years, you needed at least a 3.0 GPA.
Wow.
I had a 2.999.
Wow.
And I was getting a D minus that last semester in Fortran. And I begged the professor, just give me a D plus so I could graduate. And he did. He just turned, just said he changed the minus to a plus and handed it in. And so I got lucky.
D plus rather than a D minus? Or like, is it C plus?
No. I just needed to move my 2.999 up to a 3.0.
Sure. You don't be greedy. Yeah.
But your point is about the socialization and the friends.
Yeah.
If you were in a city and working, wouldn't you be able to make some friends?
Yes.
And you're 18?
But you know what's interesting? So like Charles Barkley, there's a college basketball player named Zion Williamson, and he hurt himself the other day at a game that was like Duke, North Carolina, and President Obama was there and a lot of people, and it was a very public thing because he's this luminary in college sports. And people are like, dude, you're going to be the number one pick in the draft. Just sit out. You don't need to play. Like, you know, like protect your benefit. And I heard Charles Barkley say, you know, listen, when did we become that obsessed about money, where money is everything? You know, you're a basketball player. You play basketball. You know, can't you do that for the school? You made a commitment. You know, and it made me think about, you know, what you're talking about. Like, I like to say the cynic knows the cost of everything, the value of nothing, you know. But I think you wrote the book Choose Yourself. So what essentially you're saying is choose yourself, right?
Right. And you don't need the blessings of, let's say, I'm going to keep picking on University of Michigan.
Sure.
But you don't need the blessings of University of Michigan to signal that you're a computer programmer or a competent news producer or whatever.
Yeah,
you can earn it through skill acquisition, and you can earn it the hard way by working hard. Like you said the other day, actions are more important than thoughts.
So
now the idea that a diploma somehow has conferred credibility on you is just a thought,
a
dream.
No, I agree.
I mean, I went to undergrad for computer science and I went to grad school for computer science, and I had to take remedial computer classes to be as good as the worst programmer at my first job. So it didn't really give me that much value. Now, I do agree you do meet like-minded friends and it helps you kind of socialize from youth to adulthood. But think about it this way too. As an adult, like I'm 51 years old. I don't think I have even a single friend who's 51 years old. As an adult, you're not really friends with people your age.
Right.
Like, how old are you?
I'm 49. I'll be 50.
So you would have been like a little kid.
Yeah, no.
You would have been in 10th grade when I'm totally. Jay, how old are you?
Please.
30. So Jay's 21 years older than me. Robin's here. Yeah. She's not my age.
Yeah. No, but I think.
Not going to say, we're not
you
gonna
have friends.
Say a woman's age on the
James,
air.
You have friends who your age, and as you know. And, but I don't even. Okay, let's say, like, I think, like, let's say you're 18 and you want to go to college and you say, I'm not sure if I want to go to law school. I might want to go to law. I love the law. You know, I watched, you know, L.A. Law, and I watched Legally Blonde, and I love it, and I want to go to law. Like, how do you know unless you try, right?
Yeah. So and that, and if you want to be,
but
so,
how do you know?
So like, unfortunately, some professions,
right.
Legally, it's against the law to not yes. go to college,
right?
But okay, yes, you're right for there. If I want to be a lawyer,
or you
want to
be a doctor,
college.
You know, and you say, hey, I love, you know, but yeah, I think what you're saying is like there seems to be a conventional religion where we're all kind of, you know, whether it's culturally or these mores where we're all kind of, there's a group think, and it's not. There are more people than you think don't need to adhere to that.
I have to say, Airbnb has changed my life. I just love staying in Airbnbs. Like in about a month, I'm going to Cocoa Beach, which is right next to Cape Canaveral. I'm going to watch some rocket launches. I'm going to, of course, be staying in a very nice Airbnb on the beach. And it's just such a great experience. Like the whole world is available to us now because of Airbnb. But whenever I'm at an Airbnb, I always realize, you know, the home that I left to come to this Airbnb, I could be making money on that right now by hosting and being an Airbnb myself. So, and I've known people, I had a friend who basically, you know, made a living from turning his home into an Airbnb. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, you do have an Airbnb there. And it can easily fit into your lifestyle, and it's a great way to earn some money. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours. And they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop. Really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Friday, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters Friday. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
The other argument, which is related to the socialization, and I think this argument is maybe the strongest, and I've seen you benefit from it, is the networking potential that college gets you.
Oh, yeah.
So you have you go to visit University of Michigan all the time. Yeah. You have a lot of friends from there. I've even met a lot of your friends. So 30 years later, you're keeping in touch with these people, which is really good.
I go back with Jason Levon, Bursley, and Lance.
Brad Meltzer.
Yeah. Brad Meltzer's the greatest person ever. Yeah, I mean...
how many podcast guests have we had from your University of Michigan connections, actually?
Well, we like Jillian Siegel, who, you know, is great. You know, we met Tom Frank, you know, the great comedian. So, a lot of friends, you know.
So I think there's some value there. But if outside of the top 20 schools, how valuable is the networking? And I won't call any school in particular, but like just some random liberal arts school in Kentucky. How good is, and nothing against Kentucky or anything, but how powerful is the networking?
Yeah, I think there are, because like if you went to Louisville or University of Kentucky, you know, I think there is. I think like what I always tell you, like, you know, like things work out best for those who make the best of the way things work out. So if you're going to
boom,
but if you go to University of Kentucky and you go there and you all worked at the Cat's Paws newspaper and you loved it and you,
but if you had been an intern working for
the Lexington Herald Leader.
Or the Louisville Gazette. I don't even know. And then you would also make connections there. And then everybody would have been, you would have stood out too. Like, oh, that's the kid. He was so bright at 18.
100%. Yeah, there's...
He brought us that story when we were paying him nothing.
And, well, yeah, it's like in the Jay-Z, there's a million ways to get it and choose one. And I think, you know, that comes out, it's a choice, right?
I do think if someone wants to go to college, which... You know, the thing is, if your kid wants to go to college and you put your foot down and say, no, I know this all too well, maybe I was a wimp about it. Like, my daughter does go to college. Maybe I was a wimp about it. I could have said, oh, no, I'm not letting you go and I'm not letting you borrow because that's unhealthy.
Yeah.
But then maybe she hates me for the next 10 years. I don't think I would have been able to deal with that.
But I also think, okay, like that expression, problem isn't the problem. The problem could become the perception of the problem. Is the problem about college itself, or is the problem with the really aggressive pricing? You know, today, I was watching a story about a school in New York, and this woman was suing them because she expressed interest in going to DeVry, and she was a single mother and wanted to learn those skills, and they were aggressively courted her, and they wanted her to pay. Then she couldn't pay, and then they kicked her out, and then her credit screwed up. She doesn't have the degree.
And by the way, that's another situation that's even worse, which is those are corporations, DeVry and University of Phoenix and some other ones.
Also not going to be a sponsor for our podcast.
I'm not putting them down either. It's just a different category. Yeah, I'm just talking about the general accredited colleges.
But I do think like they're a for-profit thing. They have interest in making money, obviously. You know, they have these huge endowments, and that's why you see a lot of politicians saying, hey, should college be free? It certainly should. Community colleges be free? You know,
like my daughter is studying acting.
Yes,
which she was debating between neuroscience or neurobiology and acting. I actually encouraged her to do acting because I feel like that's a skill as opposed to some degree. She's probably not going to be a neurobiologist. So as opposed to some degree she could just read about in books for free and get a skill, you know, that's not an actual skill, whereas acting is a very difficult skill.
Yeah.
But even there, I said to her, why not at least take a year off and come to New York City or move to LA and try auditioning for a year, because that's the bulk of beginning acting careers. See if you like that lifestyle. See if you have that skill set that you can handle psychologically, that lifestyle. But, you know, she likes the socialization. She liked kind of the pseudo extension of high school, which I totally disagree with. I think she could have, if she moved to New York to do auditioning, she would have met all the other kids who had the same interests as her and who were also auditioning.
And she would have found that tribe there.
Yeah, and then she would have also learned much more quickly and for much less expense. She would have learned whether she wanted to pursue that as a career, or she would have made a network of people in other branches.
But what if she said, oh, I want to go to Juilliard?
I don't know. I mean, I think still she might not like, you know, you don't want to learn a skill just for the fun of it if you have to pay, you know, $1 million for it in the long run with interest and everything. You want to learn a skill. First of all, acting is a skill you could learn with an acting coach for much cheaper.
Yeah, for sure.
And experiencing. Getting on stage is the only way to build a skill like that. So you either get on stage paying $1 million, or you get on stage with them paying you, or you get on stage in some kind of volunteer theater or whatever. So again, I do think though, if someone wants to go to college, community college for 2 years and then transferring is a good way, but a lot of kids don't want to do that either.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I think, and I watch younger people now when they get in college, and I think most older people aren't like, hey, you know, you need to go to this place or you don't, you know, unless they're snobs or they have other, you know, other reasons for pushing people to go to that school. I remember Frank Bruni of the New York Times wrote a great book called like Who You Are Is Not Where You Go Is Not Who You'll Be or Where You Are, you know, and it's just the idea that, okay, he looked at every president, looked at every person who was successful, and he looked back and they didn't all go to Harvard or Yale
it's a modern thing. Kids couldn't get loans when you and I went to, we couldn't borrow that kind of money.
Yeah.
That's why since 2004, I think student loan debt's gone from $200 billion to $1.6 trillion because the government, the U.S. government, realized, oh my God, 18-year-olds are idiots. They're willing to borrow a $250,000 from us, even under the terms where they could never not pay it back because we got them.
Yeah.
So the U.S. government, they're in favor of every student kid in the world going to college because they're making a ton of money across.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, 100 million. I think something like how many? I think 22 million people have some form of student loan debt.
And I think at some point there'll be a bubble, like kind of like the subprime mortgage.
But it won't be like the subprime. And actually, it's funny you say that. So a lot of people who don't fully. I mean, you know more than most people, but a lot of people who don't understand what happened in the financial crisis compare the student loan bubble to the subprime mortgage bubble. They're different because hedge funds don't, you know, bundle up student loans like derivatives and then sell them with huge leverage.
Oh, interesting.
So there's it's impossible for there to be, there might be a bubble socially, but there's not a bubble in terms of like a financial crisis.
Gotcha.
But in terms of its effect on the financial system, if one group of people have $1.6 trillion in debt and another group of people, i.e. the children of rich people, don't have any debt, this is what increases income inequality. So the children of the rich people, they're going to marry other people with no debt. There's studies that show you kind of marry people in your same financial strata.
Who you met at college.
who you met at college potentially. And then your children, they're not going to have financial debt. So income inequality, so these two sides, they become more separate.
And this is polarized.
I think this is what has led to the creation of the extremes politically. Donald Trump on one side and let's say the Bernie Sanders on the other side, is that, you know, we're getting more and more separate as a society. And I think income inequality is getting more separate. And I think the source of that is actually student loan debt. And I know it's all with good intentions. So when Lyndon B. Johnson started backing student loans, when the GI Bill started paying veterans to go to college, these are the best intentions. Get people an education. It was good thinking. But the net effect of it 50 years later is that income inequality is greater. So you just have to be, you can't
unintended consequences.
Right, it's unintended consequences. And you can't be for one without understanding it affects the other thing. Otherwise, there's hypocrisy. So if you're fine with income inequality, which is not really good for society in the long term, the only way income inequality has, there's a book, The Great Leveler by, I forget the author now, but there's a book that goes through the history of every single society in history that had larger than normal income inequality, kind of like the income inequality we have in America. And he basically concluded it only ended through either war or disease.
Oh, wow.
And like Germany being an example after World War I, and so on. There's many examples. He gave like 1,000 examples. But, I don't know what the solution is. Because I think the only solution is the government stop backing student loans. But so many people will say that's so many people who are not thinking 50 years ahead.
Right.
You know, we're all thinking 50 years ahead when it comes to climate change.
Right.
Like people are obsessed. Well, no, you got to think about your great grandchildren who don't even exist yet. They're not even like. Yeah.
And I also think like, okay, you could say, okay, well, some of those people shouldn't go to these schools. And then that may not be the answer either because, you know, that's not, you know, like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, that just perpetuates that, okay, only the really wealthy people are going to go to the quote-unquote most prestigious schools.
Well, what will happen is, Henry Blodgett pointed this out to me 10 years ago, if Harvard raised their tuition to $300,000 a year, now it's $66,000 a year, if they raise their tuition to $300,000 a year, they would still fill every spot.
Wow.
Because the rich would send their kids, the kings would send their kids there.
Yeah, wow.
And he's probably right. I mean, he went to Harvard, so he has the sense of the value of the networking and the connections that he got. You know, he infamously became the face of the bust of the internet, but then he sold Business Insider 15 years later for $300 million. So he's had his ups and downs, but smart
Seems
guy.
Like he's got some ups lately.
Yeah, he's had more ups than downs lately, certainly.
Yeah.
But, you know, again.
But it does speak about that because I happen to read the book Billion Dollar Whale, and they talked about Joe Lowe, and he went to Wharton and met all these people that wound up, you know, from schools. And yeah, there's a certain degree of elitism and.
Right. So, elitism, networking. But again, that's a book about a guy who stole $1 billion from Malaysia.
Correct.
So it's not like anybody's learning values in these schools.
That's true, too. Yes.
So there's a lot of things you can learn. Like, I spoke to a guy once I had this podcast for a while, Ask Al to Church. So this was 3 or 4 years ago. I spoke to a guy who did the entire 4-year MIT computer science degree. Right. Online, you know, they put their entire syllabus and curriculum online. They take videos of all the courses. He watched all the videos. He did all the homework and got it graded.
Right.
He took all the tests. He did it all within 12 months instead of four years.
Wow.
So he knows, he was proof that you can get the skill faster and cheaper. He paid nothing for it.
Wow.
But what did he not get? He did not get a degree.
Wow.
So. The degree you got to pay $250,000 for, and then with interest $1 million for.
Yeah,
So what's the point?
Again, I imagine it comes down to most people, let alone at 50, at 18. Well, maybe more people are likely to have the confidence to say, "I don't need all that." You know, I don't need. But I think there are times in your life you get socialized, and you need that. You need to wear a certain type of clothing. You need to go to a certain type of school. You need to eat at a certain kind of restaurant, drive a certain kind of car. You know, I feel, you know, people in marketing talk about like you buy things because how it makes you feel and you do things because how it makes you feel.
Yeah,
and,
but just think about it though, like if something makes you feel something because an advertiser.
Yes.
Like why would you drink a Coca-Cola? It's because advertisers for 100 years are saying, oh, Coke is it. You know, taste the real thing. But if you look at the actual numbers, you basically just with these first two commandments, owning a home and going to college, which everybody does, you basically cost yourself between $1 and $5 million, depending on how you do it, in the time of your life, which was the money you needed to retire. And without doing anything else, you could have, just by not owning a home and not going to college, all of your kids.
Yes.
Will be able to take care of themselves.
Wow.
And if you're 18, considering college, you have to think about your future, and you don't think about your future by getting a neurobiology degree you're never going to use. You think about your future by working, by skill acquisition, which people end up, after your first job anyway, people only value your skills. They don't value your degree. First job is the only one they might say, hey, what was your degree?
Yeah.
We only went through two of the 10 commandments of the American religion, and another thing we can veer into
encourage
is
people to read it, you know,
and we should post it. No, we'll do the next block.
Oh, yeah.
I also want to do 10 scams you encounter every day. We're going to bleed into that.
Okay, perfect.
And, but if anybody wants to argue with me on social media, which is the only purpose of social media now is arguing, because they love it when you argue on social media, because that's how they make money for every argument you have. Basically, yeah. Like, I see all these people going back and forth. Well, I guess you don't have any morals. Well, I guess you're like a Hitler. And every time everybody reloads to see, oh, did they respond to my fascinating argument that I made from my suburban air-conditioned home with my Ivy League degree I spent $1 million for? Every time you click on a reload like an idiot,
yeah,
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, they all make money. So if you want to argue with me on Twitter about this or make some good points, which I will respond to, let me know. And if you have any other commandments that you want to hear about or that you think are, you know, scams in American culture and society or world culture and society, tweet to me or tweet to Steve, yes, who doesn't have a tweeting
name. I'm going to have one. And that is something that
takes 3 minutes.
I'm doing it. I got it. You're right. Like I like to say, like, why put up for tomorrow, which you can do the day after tomorrow.
Do you think I'm too hard on you?
I think you're 100% right. I think
kind of mean.
No, not at all. No, honestly.
Steve's the best.
No, I'm not. No, I think it's good. I think, like, can't stand the heat, then get out of the kitchen.
Well, we taste. You know? And we're going. Let me just tell you how great Steve is.
Yeah.
No Supreme Court justice has gone on any podcast.
Yeah.
Next Monday, which is going to be before this podcast airs. Next Monday, we're going to the U.S. Supreme Court and talking to Sonia Sotomayor.
Yes.
And I'm super excited about it. And Steve's the only producer, I think, who could have landed that.
I think I'm excited about that. And hopefully we'll get some other people in D.C. for you guys to listen to.
Did you call Barack Obama?
I did. We have reached out to him. And we hopefully he can make it again. If you don't ask, the answer is always no for you people out there. So,
hey, can we talk to Betsy DeVos, Department of Education Secretary?
Yeah, for sure.
That's about college.
Yeah, for sure.
And Elijah Cummings, you're going to reach out to?
At Dick DeVos at, you know, they started Amway. You know, that's that family. You know, and I think she's kind of a controversial person. I also, I think it'd be terrific. Yeah.
You know what I want to talk about?
And if anybody out there in our audio experience land, if you want to suggest any people to me at my soon to be open Twitter account, then you'll let me know, and James can retweet it to me because he's an early adapter. But I'm excited to interact with you all with all positive thoughts, like all social media is, like only positive interactions.
Okay. Well,
and Jack Dorsey, I'm excited to be working with you soon on Twitter.
Hey, can we get Jack Dorsey on the podcast?
Yeah, he's done other podcast.
Joe Rogan's.
Yes.
And he was on Ben Shapiro's.
He did Bill Simmons. He did Sam Harris's.
Sam Harris, yeah. And you know, here's one that's not, I've never written about this, but here's a topic I want to talk about, maybe not on this podcast, obviously, but on one of the next few. But there was an op-ed, I don't know what newspaper because I don't read the news, but it was either New York Times or Washington Post or something like that. There was an op-ed that billionaires shouldn't be, or no, it was called Ban Billionaires, right?
Yeah, I think.
So I want to, since I have a book coming out called Think Like a Billionaire, and because we've interviewed so many billionaires, I really think it's, and then, you know, AOC, the congresswoman, who such a great strategist and campaigner, I completely disagree with her on almost every economic issue, but she even said about Howard Schultz running for, and I'm not saying Howard Schultz will be good or bad. I know nothing about him politically. Sure. But she even said, why don't you start from the bottom and rise up? Which is such a weird thing to say because this is a guy who's created a million jobs.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and has worked his whole life, you know, creating, you know, and having an impact on culture. And he's such a charitable philanthropist and so on. Anyway, that's a topic that's interesting to me
too. Like,
And I think the income inequality created by this college stuff is causing these ridiculous op-eds like that.
Yeah, I think, there's definitely, yeah. I mean, if that's a, you know, you've done the math, and I think that it has led to a lot of it, because if these people are always, you know, in quicksand and you know.
They get angry.
Yeah, yes.
So Jay is telling us we have to wrap. There's another podcast coming in here.
Yeah.
Steve, thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
And audience, please tell me if you like this kind of podcast or not, and feel free to contribute your thoughts and opinions. You can even email me, altucher@gmail.com, or call me at 203-512-2161. And talk to you soon.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.